You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 27th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live in studio while dubbing the Professional Left Christmas album, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Cable news, did you listen? All day long, Trump is pissing. He's captured the right, they're ready to fight. Welcome to the Donald's fatherland. His plan for us, it'll be great. While in his head, Muslims tailgate. Truth takes a dive, but he's always on live. They have to cover Donald's fatherland. In the morning, he can build a straw man. And of course, it's Muslim, or it's brown. The Beltway Press says nothing except, aw man. Because his poll numbers are never down. Later on, we'll inquire how it is a fucking liar can run the whole show. Well, it's both sides, don't you know? Welcome to the Donald's fatherland. You like that?
I love it. You're a genius.
All right. Let's do a lightning round of news and stuff.
All right. News and stuff.
Apparently war is coming. It looks like that every day. And
Turkey shot down a Russian aircraft, which is history may record this
or,
as.
Or not. I mean, the emails I'm getting are every 5 minutes it was someone else that shot it down. Or yeah. Someone else shot the pilots. Or someone. I mean, we just found this out this morning. So, and Elizabeth Hasselbeck is quitting Fox yeah. News to spend more time with her children because yeah.
Jefferson
they're
and Dave.
10. Mm-hmm. Really, when they're well out of diapers and in school already, uh-huh. and, you know, that's a nice excuse. You're probably just sick of talking about Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, and it's not like there's not an infinite supply of Elizabeth Hasselbeck
there's a,
out
an
there.
An infinite supply of Elizabeth Hasselbecks out there. In the hallways of Fox News.
Yeah.
Waiting to sit in that sandwich.
Sitting on the bench, waiting to get in the game.
Steve Doocy and not Steve Doocy. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
There's only one Roger Ailes, but there's an infinite number of Elizabeth Hasselbecks. That's how the world works.
That's how the world works.
We were going to say recorded live from the Elizabeth Hasselbeck LinkedIn page, but that would just be, like, cruel and funny.
Pointless.
So, but hey. So a quick rapid roundup of the news.
Yeah, there were two Sunday shows that you wanted to talk about real quick. One was Tom Brokaw
and Helene Cooper.
They were
not Ruth Marcus, but Helene Cooper.
I don't mean to laugh before you've had a chance to say it, but I did read your post, and it was one of the best things you've ever written. In
really?
My personal opinion.
Really? Well, that's why I love you.
It was really good.
Yeah. Well, when you can take the everyday mundane horror that is these Sunday shows and sort of draw a larger lesson from it. I think
yeah.
I can say I've made some small contribution to the
well,
genre.
And when Tom Brokaw looks at the camera and says, why can't we find a journalist who will tell the truth?
Exactly. Tom Brokaw. And it was just, and that's the reason we can sort of do a rapid lightning round of this. I'm in the middle of a David Brooks post. I'm not going to ruin this podcast with my half-baked ideas about that.
I'm going full Archer on this one. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Your post is going to be amazing.
No, it'll just be another David Brooks post. It will be appreciated by the aficionados, all nine of them.
Yeah.
Oh yes. This has hints of bitter almonds and regret. Yes, this is awesome. A really good way to summarize what's going on this week in the news, because we assume historians are listening to this 50 years from now going, what the hell were they thinking? What the hell, man? What the hell? Because they don't swear in the future, is to look at the Sunday shows this last week, if only because the level of incompetence mm-hmm. baked into the system which I'm not even sure it's fair to call it incompetence. The business model which corporate media has used very, very profitably for the last really 20 years has been to never, ever, ever under any circumstances call Republicans out as Republicans when they do terrible, terrible things. When they lie, when they cheat, when they screw, they break the economy, when they march us off to a war on a lie, when they fuck that war up. It's you just never, ever are allowed to call people out as Republicans, as conservatives, and say the problem with this particular box here, the problem with this situation, whatever it is that the right is crazy. And you're just not allowed to say that. And if you say that, that's your last day on network television. That's your last day on cable news, except for a couple of slivers on MSNBC, which is rapidly turning into a Fox Light network. Mm-hmm. So you're not allowed to say that. And as Hunter Thompson said of Nixon a generation ago, objective journalists were incapable of dealing with Nixon because Nixon looked good on paper. You had to get subjective to understand what a really villainous monster Hunter Thompson was good at. And Donald Trump is, I've said this many times before, is Donald Trump isn't the problem. The problem is the Republican base. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is the fascist lens through which they are focusing their paranoia and bigotry and rage. But the base is the problem. And so Donald Trump is the walking manifestation of the pig people during this election cycle. And the Sunday shows really threw up their hands and said, we don't know how to deal with this guy. We have no idea how to deal with this. George Stephanopoulos kept saying, but what you're saying, it isn't quite – I mean, there's no evidence. He didn't call him a liar, which is what he is. He didn't just look at his face and say, you're fucking lying. You're lying. And you're calling in my show. You're dialing it in. I let you dial your crap in so I don't have to look at you. You don't have to look at me. You can just hang on the phone for all you want. You can hang up whenever you please. I give you all the power and I refuse to call you out for lying. And then I wonder why you're growing in popularity in the polls, because you take on the liberal media. That's why. Mm-hmm. So George Stephanopoulos completely shit the bed because he doesn't know how to do journalism. He is not a journalist. It says so on his business card, but he is whatever the opposite of that is. He is a corporate scribe. And the corporate line is you never, ever, ever call out Republicans, qua Republicans, for being lying fascist douchebag. Mm-hmm. And so George Stephanopoulos, little slip, couldn't handle Donald Trump. Because it's not in his job description to tell the truth. It's in his job description to say both sides, both sides, both sides. And any station, any corporate outfit that gives Bill Kristol a job, which ABC News does, is in the shit can. I mean, is obviously in the tank with the fascists. George Stephanopoulos might tell himself otherwise at night, but he is every bit the lackey of the corporate state that Karl Rove is. He just wears a different suit, a smaller suit, more petite suit, from the Tommy Haverford collection, I assume. So that was happening over on ABC. On NBC, it was hilarious because it really was this whole panelist of quote-unquote journalists just crying, please, won't someone come, someone who isn't us, come and talk about Donald Trump and what a crazy man Donald Trump is. And it was Helene Cooper, you know, it's just so sad that nobody takes on Donald Trump. And Tom Brokaw, you know, it really is just a shame. Where are all the journalists? Where are they gone? Oh, my God. It's just so very sad. And Helene Cooper, you know, it was a call and response. I know. He's so crazy. And he doesn't tell the truth. And nobody will take him on. And Chuck Todd just sort of like, you know, fingering his rosary and really, you know, dovening, you know, just sort of like, oh, yes, it's just terrible. Governing is the wrong word, but sort of like, oh, isn't it awful? Yes, it's also very terrible. A panel full of some of the most highly paid journalists in the country who can command a spotlight that you and I will never, ever see.
Yeah.
Bitching about how no one will take on Donald Trump. No one in their profession will step up and do the dirty work because they can't. And what was really kind of fascinating was that Matthew Dowd, who is he was chief strategist for the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign in 2004.
Yeah.
He's now a paid analyst on the same network as Bill Kristol.
Analyst.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But he's now an independent.
See.
So you can trust
him. Makes all the difference in the world. Yeah.
And while this was all going on, he was on Twitter tone policing people. about how, you know, Democrats don't like it when we call them fascists. Maybe we shouldn't be throwing this term around, you know, because I think we all need to take it down a notch.
Why hasn't anyone vetted Hillary Clinton?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, he can't start talking in specifics because at that point, Twitter would become sentient and beat the shit out of him.
Would beat him to a pulp. Yeah.
So Matthew Dowd being another corporate whore who is paid to lie on television can only go so far as to say, everyone really is to blame for this. We're all equally to blame for the level of vitriolic rhetoric that's being tossed around. And you know what? We need to really stop with the Hitler references and all this talk of fascism because you don't like it when the right does it to you, do you? And I've used this analogy before. It's a fight over font size.
Yeah.
It's Donald Trump lies in 72-point railroad font. Liberals point to Donald Trump lying and say, that man's lying. And isn't that a shame? And what does that say about the base of his party that is okay with that? We say that in 72-point railroad font. Mm-hmm. And Matthew Dowd says, can we all just decrease the font size just a little? Because the problem really is the font size. It's not the truth or accuracy of anything. Because if we start measuring truth or accuracy, I will be fired because I am an incompetent whore. So instead, we need to talk about how everybody is to blame for everything all the time. And he's doing this on Twitter pretty much at the same time that Tom Brokaw and Helene Cooper and Chuck Todd are just pissing and moaning and crying into their 401ks going, won't someone who isn't us please come and take on Donald Trump? Please, please, please. And you can really see, and meanwhile on Fox, Rush Limbaugh is the guest on and you can sort of see the whole landscape. You can see that the reason you don't take on Donald Trump or Republicans generally is because you have lobotomized yourself for money to the point where you will not allow yourself to point to a liar and call him a liar. And so because if you do, the Matthew Dowds of the world or the Mark Halperins of the world or the David Brookses of the world will come along and say, now, 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 mm-hmm. now, now. And I thought it was equally hilarious that it's the beam in MSNBC's eye. Lawrence O'Donnell, the next day, gently chided George Stephanopoulos for not pointing at Donald Trump and saying he's a liar. Because, you know, Sunday morning shows are like church. There's a certain protocol. You don't say certain things. You don't bring up certain topics. Not on this show. You know, we can be sort of brutally honest on this show. On cable news, we don't do this sort of thing. But isn't it a shame, basically, that they're not able to call this guy a liar, George Stephanopoulos? I really felt sorry for him. I felt, you know, I said, you know, I thought to myself, you know, maybe you should walk down the hall and talk to Chuck Todd.
Yeah, he's right down there, isn't he, in the same building?
And on your way to Chuck Todd's office, why don't you drop into Joe Scarborough's office and ask him how is it the network you work for gives a notorious Republican liar 3 hours a day, every day, all week long, and pays him $5 or $6 million a year to lie to you? Maybe before you worry about the speck in the eye of the other network, you should clean up your own shit. Mm-hmm. But of course, again, another subject we're not allowed to talk about on television. Lawrence O'Donnell dares not say Joe Scarborough is part of the problem. He can't point to Chuck Todd and say Chuck Todd is an enabler of this kind of fascism because Chuck Todd has said repeatedly in interviews that it is not his job to call people out who are lying to him.
He said that on the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said that during the interview, an extended interview that I have up on my site somewhere, where he just feels it's not his job. He says people come on the show and they say things, you know, that we both know are not true.
Well, and he said that in an interview with comedians. So he was able to say that because they're talking about funny stuff. Yeah. So they asked, Lewis Black was the one that asked Chuck Todd, you know, they just lie to you. They just lie. And how can you let this out? Well, if I call them out on it,
they won't come on the show.
They won't come back.
And so Chuck Todd is part of the problem. Chuck Todd is, as the late Stephen Gilliard used to say, a quisling, one of the people who enable, who are perfectly willing to go along with the fascism right up until it challenges his professional standing or cuts into his profit, at which point he's like, hey, hey, hey. And so, it is terribly sad, Tom Brokaw. It is terribly sad that Donald Trump has crossed a line. But the Republican Party crossed that line 20 years ago. And Every one of these fuckers is more than happy to go along and pretend it wasn't happening. It wasn't happening. It's not happening here. It can't happen here. Isn't it really true that dirty hippies are just as bad? Look at all these straw men. I spent a whole career putting straw men up in every corner of my office. Let's talk about the straw men. Let's have a lot of really crazy. Let's have Rich Lowry on TV to talk about both sides. Let's have Ben Dominic on TV to talk about both sides. Let's bring in every crazy right-wing blog. Let's put Eric Erickson on TV.
And this is why I was almost crying on the way to church on Sunday. Was on my way out the door, I'm turning off the TV, and who is it but Hugh Hewitt, who's an intellectual, universally regarded as an intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a propagandist. He's good at that.
Yes, he is.
But he is a right-wing propagandist who is serving the base. And that conversation that he had with Joe Scarborough, where Joe Scarborough is really worried about winning a presidential election for once, and says, you know, Ben Carson is just lying, and you're saying that it doesn't matter, and I can't remember what the final issue was that they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think they were talking about Benghazi. He was talking to Hugh Hewitt, and Hugh Hewitt kept saying, well, we've got this new paper, we've got this letter, we've got this thing on Benghazi. You know, the Benghazi hearings are over, but we have something else on Hillary.
Yeah, there's always something else.
And there was always something else. And Joe Scarborough, to his credit, was saying, look, we've got to be for something. We've got, if we want to win an election, we've got to be for something. This only matters. These conspiracy theories regarding Hillary Clinton only matter to the Republican base. They don't matter to the general voter. The voters don't care. Believe me, as Joe Scarborough said, believe me, I have been around this table for 3 weeks about the emails.
Mm-hmm.
People don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And Hugh Hewitt said, you know, proving Joe Scarborough's point, said the Republican base cares very much.
Yes.
So now we know who Hugh Hewitt works for.
And Hugh Hewitt is one of those people who now has a backstage pass to
any Sunday show he wants. Conservative intellectual who will come on and spew against, and he is a rabid anti-Hillary conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, and always has been.
Yep.
And of course, what really made it perfect was having the break glass in case of emergency version of David Brooks. Ron Fournier sitting around the same table going, you know, really, isn't it all of us? Isn't everyone equally to blame for everything that happens everywhere?
Yeah.
And so it was.
In the meantime, Rush Limbaugh is saying George Bush isn't responsible for anything. There was no ISIS when he left office.
And Ted Cruz is brilliant. Ted Cruz is brilliant. And Ben Carson might not be qualified, but I'd vote for him over any Democrat because the Democrats are a bunch of. And if you haven't read Charlie Pierce this week, wrote a wonderful piece about the Christian hay shaking snake handling dinner in Iowa, where seven
really
candidates
scary.
And we're the seven candidates showed up. And this is, again, if you plot this along a continuum, if you plot it along a line, this is all very predictable. This is all stuff liberals have been talking about for years.
Yeah.
But nobody wanted to listen because frankly.
Well, this is what I wanted to just get back to before we get to our letters, which is the Republican base.
Yeah.
And what the problem is. I was on Twitter this morning, Driftglass. This is typical, though. Right winger on Twitter complaining. You know how the State Department has set out travel advisories, telling Americans, you know, they need to be careful. There's all these advisories about where to go and how to watch out for things. This right winger on Twitter said, yeah, great. They're only telling Americans to be careful, right?
Yeah, don't travel to Florida. That's the advisory I would.
The U.S. State Department can only tell Americans. There's no other. Yeah. See, it's all about attacking Americans. See.
Well, and again,
it's that stupid. It is idiocracy. It is people don't believe you in the media when you say they're that stupid, but they are that stupid.
Well, and they're not necessarily straight up stupid. They are deeply committed to a crazy ideology.
They're committed. Why doesn't the camera turn on that?
Because when that happens, you get a call from Andy Lack or Phil Griffin and telling you you're fired. Mm-hmm. You get a call from the person who actually runs the network, the people who own the network. You get a call from Comcast. You get a call from Sinclair saying you're fired. That's that, because there is no other explanation. There's no explanation on this green earth why Chuck Todd cannot say the problem with this election, even if you want to isolate it to this election, is that the Republican base is now so rabid and so demented and so ridiculous that Ted Cruz and the rest of these dwarfs can go to Iowa and say, take the Sarah Palin line of palling around with terrorists and take it up a level.
And no, take it up a level. And what the response is, and I was reading about Ted Cruz's speech, the response is, you know, I like Ted Cruz because he's not egotistical.
That's right.
He's doing this for Jesus Christ.
Well, and when Ted
real,
Cruz...
That's a real quote. Yeah, I'm not making that up.
When Ted Cruz stands up and says... Barack Obama, to the effect, I mean, Charlie Pierce says they go right up to the line, then they wink over the line. But it's that essentially Barack Obama is consciously and deliberately in league with terrorists to destroy America on purpose. And the entire audience gets up and shouts, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, you know, because they love that shit. And that doesn't scare the fuck out of you. Then there's something wrong with you. And when you will not, I mean, you could put... You could put a gun to Chuck Todd's head, metaphorically, and he would not report on that story. Because the minute he does, Chuck Todd goes back to selling, you know, hot apple pies at McDonald's. There's no professional future for you in the current media if you simply have the sense to point to what's going on the right and do what Jon Stewart did. Just point a fucking camera at it and say, oh my God, can you believe this? That's why Jon Stewart was indispensable. Because no one in the media will point a camera at the Republican Party and say, "Can you fucking believe this?" Mm-hmm. And that's what so that's why it has come full circle on that one cluster of Sunday shows. On the one hand, you have people begging for someone else to come along and do my job for me because Tom Brokaw is again he's a corporate hack. He's a stooge. He belongs to the corporation and he's not going to risk his career by actually doing journalism.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the people who have been doing that for the last 20 or 30 years are called liberals. And they're the people you will not let anywhere near the camera. So the cavalry you want is the very people that you refuse to put anywhere near a camera because they will tell you the truth. And that is something you desperately don't want to do. So as long as there's money to be made being Chuck Todd and being George Stephanopoulos, as long as there's a buck to be made doing that, no one's going to point the camera at Donald Trump and say, you were worried about fascism coming to this country? There it is. It's right there. And you know that mob behind it? Those are the millions and millions and millions of right-wing fascists that you've been pretending didn't exist for the last 30 goddamn years. And everyone who has been in part of the conspiracy to pretend this wasn't happening needs to lose their job. So, since that's not going to happen, let's just say thank you.
Well, and also... I'm very grateful, very grateful to you and to Charlie Pierce for saying what needs to be said. And I thought it was funny that Charlie Pierce actually sort of quoted you.
Ah.
Without he sort of does that a lot, but you two do write in a very similar vein.
And we do swap emails. I will
and
say
you
that.
You do swap emails, and it's a great camaraderie you two have. But when I had to check to see who I was reading when Charlie Pierce wrote. Here's a tip, gang. Short of, quote, I resign, unquote, there is nothing the president can say that will stop the Republicans from mongering fear and mongering war and just plain making stuff up.
Exactly. And that has been true since the day he was elected.
The day he put his hand on the Bible.
And
there's nothing he can say that will make it all right for them.
So every person who's written a column on leadership and bipartisanship and can't we all get along and why is the president compromising more for the last 6 years needs to go back. Again, if we were in any kind of honest system where the media wasn't completely corrupt and broken, those people would be fired. Those people would be writing theater reviews for the Peoria Pantograph, but they're not. Yeah. They're writing op-ed columns for the New York Times that are read by millions of people every goddamn day. And that's why our system is screwed. So let's talk about all the good stuff that's happened to people over the last year.
Yeah, we're going to read some letters from you. And thank you, everyone, for writing in. Mm-hmm. I think I've got most of the letters up in our notes today. And if not, if we missed you, let us know and we'll read you later.
Yes, we will.
We certainly will. I'll start, if you don't mind.
No, please.
And then we'll go on and take turns here.
Gotcha.
Andrew wrote in, and Andrew would like us to know that he doesn't mind the dick jokes on the podcast.
No.
We had heard from people on both sides of this mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm. But Andrew does not mind the dick jokes, and he said, I have been fascinated, however, by the right's obsession about healthcare and other liberal objects being forced down their throats.
Yeah, it's
what
weird.
What would Dr. Freud say?
Yeah, everything has been forced down their throat, everything, everything. And so it's and nowhere else is it being forced.
Yep.
So
regarding killing baby Hitler, I found that whole meme, especially when taken up by the New York Times Magazine, both jejune and chilling. Mm-hmm. Jejune because time travel, and chilling because this thinking has played a documented part in genocide. Yes, this is a tiny infant, but it will grow up to be our enemy and kill us if we don't kill it first. Yes. Thank you for sharing your personal lives with listeners. The personal is political. And many of us are searching for ways to be meaningfully engaged, not overloaded, not despairing, or debilitatingly enraged. So it is very valuable that you share yourselves with us in that way. You know, sometimes I am debilitatingly enraged, Driftglass.
Yes, you are.
Don't think that doesn't happen to all of us from time to time. Mm-hmm. But hang in there and find a reason to laugh and take a break when you need to and look out for each other. That's our advice.
Well, and there's an interesting crossover between that meme and the refugee meme.
Yeah, there is.
I forget who said it on one of the few liberal shows on MSNBC that are left, but probably on Chris Hayes' show. And apologies for not knowing who said this, but they were quoting the conservative congressman who stood in the way of the Jewish refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And said, sure, they're kids now, but 10 years from now, they'll be basically full-grown kikes. And that mm-hmm. was his direct quote. And that is the sentiment. That is the phrase that killed the bill, that condemned those people to death, is that, mm-hmm. sure, they're lovely kids now, but you know in their blood, mm-hmm. they're really not one of us. Yeah. We can't trust them in our midst.
And tribalism, yeah.
If you actually go back to the Inquisitions, part of the reason the Inquisition existed was because there was all this forced conversion to Christianity in the previous generations. Join or, you know, die, basically, if you were Jewish. And then suddenly the church decided, oh, crap, we have all these infidels inside the church now.
Inside the church,
we need
right.
to find out who they are and what they're plotting to do. And suddenly there's another round of murder and torture, et cetera.
And purging, yeah.
Yep. So if you had to travel back in time, I wouldn't kill baby Hitler. I would travel back and tell Martin Luther to lay off the goddamn anti-Semitism.
That'd be a start. There'd be one place to go. Hey.
Yeah.
So you read Carter's letter, please.
Carter wrote us and said, my endless thanks for Bible Bitch and the debate interpretive theater. Oh, lovely team. While it is some comfort in times like these that there have always been times like these, it doesn't necessarily make times like these more fun. Thanks for riding shotgun on the anti-crazy train. Yeah, our pleasure, man.
Yep. And Sam wrote to us and he says, listening to the Rachel Maddow Show podcast from Friday and Monday, I noticed a difference between Hillary and Bernie's answer to the same question. Mm-hmm. Rachel asked each how they would improve Democrats' performance in down-ticket elections, such as for state legislature seats. Hillary said Democrats need to recruit better candidates and raise more money. Bernie said that turnout was what wins these elections, and that enthusiasm would raise turnout. That struck me as representative of how these two candidates think. If you think it's worthy of a minute or two of your podcast, I'm sure we listeners would be interested in your take on this. I think that's true.
Yeah.
Hillary, again, is the more corporate of the candidates and looks at things from the standpoint of an election professional where Bernie looks at things as an evangelist.
A movement.
You know, a movement. Yeah.
Movement.
Yeah. So I think that is true. But I like both of those ideas.
Yeah, I was going to say.
All of the above.
Can I have all of the above? Because I would really like all of the above. We need better candidates. We need Democrats to not be afraid.
And we know, both of us know what it's like to have a ballot in front of us where it's only a Republican running unopposed.
Yeah.
You know, and at that point, what do you do? Okay.
So
we could run for office.
And lose. Really spectacularly, actually. speaking of which, this is just a little bit of FYI. This is the week when people who are running for office in Illinois file their petitions. So on the front page of our local paper is the obligatory photograph of the first person in line with their boxes and boxes of petitions and signatures and so forth, which, you know, that kind of thing gives me hope. I'm a sucker for local democracy. I'm a sucker for people who show up at the polling place, crackpot or not, with their boxes and boxes of signatures to run for some obscure office that you're never going to hear about, but who take the time and the effort to gather the support of their neighbors and gather up enough money to try to run for office and make a difference in their community. And I deeply respect that. And it is a shame that the Democratic Party, the corporate party, does not believe it is worth the investment of time and passion and money necessary to put those kind of people on the ballot in more places other than safe Democratic districts. It's just embarrassing. It's just freaking embarrassing. And it's a surefire way to lose in term, which is basically what has happened. So I will take all the above every day.
And I would also say put minimum wage and pot legalization on the ballot everywhere. All right. And even, I mean, a non-binding referendum on gay marriage. Put that on there. Although, you know, that worked for Karl Rove a few years ago. I think it would work the other direction now.
I think history has flipped on that. I really do. Yeah. That is encouraging.
Something to be grateful for.
Truly thankful for that gay marriage is now a thing in this country that people are, you know, happy about and is moving rapidly towards social acceptance. Yeah. You want to talk about very briefly, just take a minute out from our letters, the Supreme Court case today?
Yeah. It's not a Supreme Court case. It's federal court.
Federal court
turned away the Wisconsin statute that claimed that Planned Parenthood clinics had to have hospital privileges in order to stay open. And 2-1, the judges in the federal court said, no, yeah. This is actually, you say you're trying to keep women safe, but actually this is opposite world.
Yeah. You've clearly invented these lawsuits to shut them down. So
right.
No, we're not going.
It's the opposite. That one judge did say it's the opposite of that.
Yeah.
You're actually not interested in women's safety at all.
So look for these things. I mean, you gotta glean the headlines sometimes, but those stories are out there.
Yes, they are.
All right, next up,
my turn. Oh, it's your turn. Your turn.
Well, it's your friend though.
Well, it's my friend from college. All right, I'll read Lee's letter. This is Lee. Lee lives in Colorado, and he's my friend from college, and he's a very funny person. He wrote, "Dear Fran and Mr. Driftglass, I am thankful for Citizens United and the corporate sponsors for next year's presidential debates, Nike, both sides just do it, PepsiCo, both sides Mountain Dew it, and the Bisexual American Agricultural Alliance, or BA. And Yoda. Do it both sides."
Yeah. Thank you, Lee.
I am also thankful for family, old and new, for reminding me how absurd and wonderful the world is. Happy trails, Lee. Thank you, Lee, very much. Lee was at my first wedding and photographed it for me. And his wife was expecting their son at the time. And his son just went off to college. So, I mean, it's... life goes fast. It really does. Anyway, I'm so glad to hear from him and see his family on Facebook and all that good stuff. So, all right. Would you like to read Julia's letter?
Julia wrote in and said, "I'm thankful for my amazing husband. We've been on a journey together these past almost 30 years, 20 married, that has at times been painful, but always full of love. And we have grown together as partners, parents, and citizens. Thanks and happy Thanksgiving."
Amen.
Amen to that.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
JM wrote in, and JM is a frequent correspondent with us. "I am grateful to you two for always saying all the same things I am thinking."
He controls our brain.
"Also, I am hoping my mom's cancer treatment goes well this week," and we are too. JM, thank you very much for writing in.
Sending lots of positive energy your way.
Yeah.
All right, Bill writes this and says, "I'm thankful that in Canada, the vile conservatives have been driven from office by Trudeau the Younger."
Yay!
"You might want to see what happened the last federal election has brought to pass in the Great White North. Maybe the same thing could happen in the United States, too." Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. I got my fingers crossed. I mean, Louisiana was a one-off.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're... when your gubernatorial candidate has asked his hooker girlfriend to get an abortion in Louisiana.
You know what? This one time, I ain't going to vote for him. One time, I ain't going to vote for him. I can't do it.
I can't bring myself to do it.
I can't. I realize I'm letting a dirty commie, a dirty liberal commie, who probably kill us all with Obamacare. I'll probably kill us all and let the terrorists in to burn down the French Quarter. Kill us all. But I can't do it. I can forgive the prostitution. And who doesn't like a nice, comfortable pair of diapers every now and then? But frankly, it's getting the abortion. Making your whore have an abortion. Can't do it. And but you can't have that in every election in every place. So we're going to have to find other issues to run on other than.
Besides, I will say that Vitter's opponent didn't pull punches.
That is
how you got to run as a goddamn Democrat.
Right.
I'm sorry, but you got to pull punch and you cannot pull punches. You have to say, look, you're a whoremongering abortion provider. And you're dishonest. And don't be afraid to be honest about these things.
No. And don't wait for Tom Brokaw to come save you, because Tom Brokaw is not going to save you.
No, he's busy funding his 401k, as you say. All right.
Where's Mike Royko when you need him? Whoa, come on. He's dead. He's dead.
He's dead. You're here.
You're here. You could do this job. You're paid enough. No.
All right. Evil Mike writes.
Huh?
Evil Mike is a buddy of ours.
Yep.
So I'm listening to and, as usual, enjoying the podcast, episode 311. And when you get to the part where you're talking about Bluegal's interview with the media guru, and she said the guy kind of chastised her for cussing, and I've noticed a pretty drastic shift away from the profanity in the last year or so, and various of my sphincters, physical as well as spiritual and intellectual, are tightening up. And then you said, paraphrasing here, fuck it, we ain't going to change. And then everything went back to being okay again.
Yeah.
Woo, that was a close one.
Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't, all he offered was advice. If he'd offered cold, hard cash, we are who we are. I mean, we've established who we are, and if you and I both know this, because we've both done it before many, many times. If we go on a different medium, a different microphone,
someone else's house. Exactly. If we're in someone else, their house, their rules. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely understand that. But this is our house. This is our hisy.
This is our house. So, Evil Mike concludes, here's what I'm thankful for. The Blue Glass Clan of Springfield and the feeling of getting back home every week. That's it. Keep doing good.
Aww.
Signed, Evil Mike. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Well, David wrote to us, and here's his email. Dear Driftglass and Blue Gal, great show last Friday. I have convinced a right-wing friend to listen to your podcast. I told him that this Driftglass guy really tells it like it is, and told him of your mainstream media both sides meme. He agrees, which is pretty cool. He's excited about listening to one or more podcasts in your archive. I'm interested in getting his critique. That's
absolutely. Write us again, David. Let us know what he says. Love to hear from him.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin wrote a great email to me about affordable housing, which I'm going to save for another date.
Mm-hmm.
And he added, I may not have a job, but I'm tech aware and I'm thankful for my littles. And he sent a picture of himself with his two little children.
Yes.
Who are so adorable. And we know what that's like. Believe me, we know what job searches and feeling like you're not getting anywhere with that is really hard. And we're there right now. And
we're back there.
We're thankful for our littles, too, who are not so little.
Yes. Yes. I can still lift them if I have to, but.
If you have to.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Zombie Rotten McDonald, a frequent writer to us, wrote in, you asked, so I'm responding. So it's my fault, I guess. Okay, great. Of course, I'm thankful for the Professional Left podcast. As others have said, it made me feel like I wasn't alone when it seemed like everyone had gone insane. Everyone has gone insane. And I've gone back to listen to some of the early shows. While great, boy, have you guys gotten great at this.
Yeah, don't listen to the early shows.
Yeah, yeah.
We have gotten a lot better at this.
It's like Babylon 5. Just skip the first season. Just totally skip the first season. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
But most of all, having suffered a heart attack in June on Father's Day, no less, I'm thankful to be here at all. Not to mention grateful as all hell to my wife Sublime for making sure I got to the hospital and got the care I needed. Thanks for blogging and podcasting and keeping up your great work.
Thank you, Zombie Rotten McDonald, and I'm glad you're here too. And I love that wife Sublime. What a nice title to give someone.
Well, let me just say, speaking as a dyspeptic Irish old man, or not quite old yet, but I'm getting there. I cannot tell you the number of times my wife has saved my ass in more ways than one. In literal sense, I haven't had to have the ambulance called yet, but I'm sure that day will come at some point. But I don't even like to think about what I would be like if I didn't have the inimitable Blue Gal, who is so much smarter than me and a much, much better person than I am in every respect, to lean on and to really sort of like collapse into when I'm just really depressed or pissed off or if I just had too much of something or other, which doesn't happen every day. But boy, oh boy, the number of spirals into just despair and depression I have been spared because I have an awesome wife is a number that I can't count to. So,
well, we look out for each other in that regard.
Yeah, we do.
You, as I said last week, you know when to pull me away from social media.
Yes.
You got to get off of that now.
Yes.
So,
and I'm grateful for my family, extended family, the family out west, the family up north, the family I have under this roof, the family yet to come. Who knows who's going to marry who and who's what my kids or grandkids will look like. Mm-hmm. But the more I see of this world and the more time passes, the more I'm grateful for the simple things that are truly irreplaceable. And that does not include material possessions, except for these one really or two really cool things. Although we did get an irreplaceable material possession this week.
We did. Yep. We did. And there's a letter with it. Do you have that out
there? I happen to have
your,
it right on
your
me.
Area? Because why don't we read that letter and then we're done.
Excellent. Dear Driftglass and Blue Gal, here's the paper rustling to prove that I'm not lying. It's a real letter from a person. I will just say GD because I don't have any permission to say anybody's name. This was the year to start going through the vast collection of stuff I've accumulated over the years and try to find homes for it all. Boy, oh boy. I came across this autographed copy of Fahrenheit 451 that I got signed by Ray Bradbury at the 2003 Los Angeles Times Festival of Books. I still remember seeing him at his author's table with a long line of admirers and aspiring writers, and him, with his glasses and white hair, patiently meeting one and all, taking a moment to talk and graciously sign whatever the next person put in front of him. It was an inspiration. It was the 50th anniversary of Fahrenheit 451's publication, and we were just weeks into our catastrophic invasion of Iraq, a war that saw millions of us Cassandras in the streets for months trying to tell the damn fools how this all ends, only to be dismissed with a backwards wave of W's hand and derisively called a focus group. Back in those dark days, I depended on the blogosphere to get me through. You should have chosen whiskey, my friend, but that's a story. helped keep me from going out of my mind with isolation, loneliness, and the overwhelming futility of it all. Now, in these newly fulminating dark ages, great turn of phrase, by the way, I have you and the rest of the podcast that I count on like a warm fire on a cold night. Boy, does that feel good. When as a writer and a podcaster, when I hear that, I just feel wonderful. I look forward to Fridays and getting to visit with you both, and I'm always so grateful that you know how much it means to all of us out here to hear your voices and share the tears, the laughter, and the outrage, the wonderment that in the midst of all the hopelessness, we still have each other. Thanks so much to both of you. All the best, GW. All.
Thank you very much. And he did send you a hardcover copy of Fahrenheit 451 signed by Ray Bradbury. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. We love you and thank you so much. We're so grateful for the podcast community. You guys are awesome. We love hearing from you. I always say that every week, but it's absolutely true. And happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Poppy. And Poppy is as beautiful as the flower for which she is named. I also believe that she's very careful about not missing a meal. So remember that. Don't miss a meal.
It's the little things.
She looks like she's very loved. I believe she is a rescue kitty, and that's awesome as well. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! let her on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And Driftglass, we did get a donation this week for $4.57.
Yeah.
And the person said, yeah, yeah, I did go to Starbucks this week.
That's
how you do it. Mm-hmm. Don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local. We also believe in shopping Amazon with our link. If your alternative is a big box store, don't forget Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Don't forget to use our link.
Mm-hmm.
We have noticed a lot of people purchasing, as I said before, sound systems, musical instruments, all kinds of things that have to do with audio, which sometimes can bring us a good chunk of change. When we get those $25 donations from Amazon because you bought something big, we're not going to say specific things because we know that there are people who are buying gifts for people who listen to the podcast.
Exactly.
But then someone bought an MP3 version of Handel's Messiah through our link. And that's all we can see is what was purchased on what date. We can't see names or addresses or anything. We just see the items.
Mm-hmm.
We got 85 cents for that.
Yeah.
And that didn't cost any extra to the person that bought Handel's Messiah. So those things really do add up. And we're very grateful to you for using our Amazon link. Thank you for doing that. Approximately 1% or so of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. I also wanted to thank the listener who wrote in and sent us a generous contribution and said, yeah, you're getting my NPR money this year because Jonah Goldberg was on Morning Edition.
He was. Groundwater is unfit to drink, people.
And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. No. A line has been crossed.
So thank you very much for that donation. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are truly grateful for all the fucks Obama didn't give this year. Thanks, Obama.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovin'. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University Dogface Herman has sent us some narrations, Driftglass.
I love narrations.
Yeah, these are narrative passages in different shows and movies, and you are to guess what they are.
Without narration, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas would just be a crappy cartoon, frankly.
Yeah. See, there you go. All right. Yeah. Hey, number one.
It was a very difficult task explaining to this refined and delicate lady that we were in the belly of a fish. But I must confess that traveling even at thousands of leagues under the sea and under such conditions was a welcome adventure for me with this fair maiden by my side.
Oh, Jesus. Well, if it's... if it's leagues and it's a fish under the ocean, I'm going to go with 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And it's some version that doesn't have what's his name in it? British actor James Mason as Nemo or whatever. But some version I've never seen before. But I'm going to go with 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Actually, this is Baron Prasil from 1961. Story about Baron Munchausen, the greatest storyteller of all time. This is not the Terry Gilliam version.
That I got.
This is Baron Munchausen is the greatest storyteller of all time. He's so good, in fact, that a psychological condition was named after him. Do you know what that one is?
Yes, I do. It's Munchausen by proxy.
That's right. And that's
which I have used very often
in your writing as a metaphor.
In analogizing,
it's where a parent, usually a mother, makes up diseases for their child. Yeah.
Or in the larger sense, you invent a disaster to swing in like the hero and take credit for solving the disaster.
Hmm. I wonder when that's happened.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Dr. Sherman says, this is not really science fiction, but IMDb tags it as sci-fi because this particular version is about how the Baron takes on the man in the moon, an astronaut, and takes him to Earth for adventure.
Hmm. Yeah, anything by Baron Munchausen, I'll take it.
All right. Hey, much. Number two.
People. All going somewhere. All with their own thoughts, their own ideas. All with their own personalities. One is wrong because he does right. And one is right because he does wrong. Pull the string. Dance to that which one is created for.
That's got to be Ed Wood. That's because, you know,
Ed Wood. It is Ed Wood.
It's got to be, I got to say, it's not science fiction, but it's Glenn or Glenda.
It's Glenn or Glenda. Pull the string.
Yes. Pull the string. Pull the string.
And then they had the buffalo.
Pull the string.
Rampaging buffalo in the movie.
Really?
Right. Yes.
I will be honest with you. The only thing I remember about Glenn or Glenda is Ed Wood, the movie.
I've seen the whole thing, Glenn or Glenda. It's awesome. It's an awesome movie when you consider.
Well, he was an awesome director. He really was.
He was true to his vision.
He was. You know, right. we know bloggers like that, don't we?
We sure do.
They're very, very true to their
true
vision.
True to your vision.
As the vision might be. You got to respect
that in a really good way. Too.
We do.
I mean.
Hey, Ed Wood. Absolutely cobbled together, you know, whatever he could lay his hands on to put his vision, as cracked as his vision was, on screen. And you know what? 50, 60 years later, people do remember Ed
Wood.
They
know who Ed Wood is. Exactly. Exactly.
So respect.
So respect. All right. Number three. You and I have been talking about this one.
New York may be the city that never sleeps. But it sure does sleep around. Not that I'm complaining. Cheaters are good for business. A big part of the job is looking for the worst in people. Turns out I excel at that. Clients hire me to find dirt. And I find it. Which shouldn't surprise them, but it does.
That bitch! She's sleeping with my brother?
Knowing it's real means they gotta make a decision. One, do something about it. Or two, keep denying it. Shoot the messenger. Tell me I'm getting off on ruining their already shitty lives. Option two rarely pans out. And then there's the matter of your bill.
Yeah, that's it's like Frozen. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it, but the zeitgeist keeps slapping me. It's like, you should watch this. You got to watch this. It's got to be Jennifer Jones.
It's Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones.
This is a new Netflix series based on Marvel, right? Uh-huh.
What channel is that on my TV?
you have to get one of the kids to turn on the old Wii.
Uh-huh.
And move the wand thingy over so that we can get the Netflix turned on.
What's a Wii again?
Yeah, you know, you don't have to worry. We'll set it up for you, okay?
I have a feeling if I just put enough aluminum on the rabbit ears, I'll be able to pick
you'll be
it
able to get it. Okay. Jessica Jones, Marvel TV show, and Dr. Sherman says, I'm only a few episodes in, but I'm hooked. And he made sure this clip had no spoilers for people that want to go see it. All right. Number four.
Let me get this straight. A free-spirited alien fell in love with baseball and ran away from the other non-fun-having aliens and made himself black because that would prevent him from getting to the majors where his unspeakable secret might be discovered by an intrusive press and public. And you're also implying that...
You certainly have a knack for turning chicken salad into chicken spit.
You're also implying that this baseball-playing alien has something to do with the famous Roswell UFO crash of July 47, aren't you?
You're just dying to connect the dots, aren't you, son?
Oh, that's it's X-Files.
It's X-Files.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's X-Files. Big Dave Duchovny.
Mm-hmm.
And an actor who I really enjoy. I don't know if he's still alive or not. I think he is. I'd hate to say yes if he's not or no if he isn't. But Emmett Walsh.
Yeah, that's Emmett Walsh.
Who always plays the same kind of guy. He always plays the guy in the sort of striped linen suit and the frumpy hat. He's a crooked detective, or he's a slow on the uptake cop, or he's the wise hustler who's been around.
It would be really easy, I think, with Emmett Walsh to be wardrobe for him, because you could basically just crunch up a white suit in a shoebox, step on it a couple times, and then put it on him, and you're all set.
And you open his closet, and that's pretty much all he's got,
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of those actors that I just really like, because he...
Being that guy.
Slow and deliberate. And being that guy. He knows exactly. He's the John Wayne of being Emmett Walsh.
Yes, he is. Mm-hmm. All right, number five.
Then the night came. And the morning came. And then the night came again. I hardly remember when I was rescued. However, I'm sorry now that I was. If I was really in love with her... I should have eaten the mushrooms with her and become one. At least we would have been together. But I came back, only to be condemned as insane. I had no choice. All that time, it suffered with hunger. And then I lost her. I was confused. I couldn't decide what to do. And then I ate them.
I have no... I assume it involves mushrooms of some kind.
It involves mushrooms.
But I have no idea.
This is a
movie. Alice in Wonderland.
This is a movie called Attack of the Mushroom People.
Oh, well, okay, fine. Fine, give it away.
It's from the year of my birth, 1963.
Yeah.
And Dogface Turman says, this is from the last scene of the movie, but I'm not giving anything away because if you watch the first 2 minutes, then you could finish the script yourself. I'll bet you could.
I bet I could.
It's got an attack of mushroom people.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, here's the pitch. Mushroom people are attacking. Oh, I like that. I like that idea. Tell me more. No, you'll have to give me some
development. No, that's all it is. Yeah. That's the whole thing. All right, number six.
It cost Commander Robert Peary 20 years of unremitting hardship and misery to reach the North Pole, finally, in 1909. It would have astounded Peary to learn that by the late 1950s and early 60s, the vast, frozen top of the world he pioneered had become a vital highway for world travel and commerce, not just in the skies, but also deep under the ice in the frigid 5 million square mile depths of the Arctic Ocean.
Oh, Jesus. This sounds like if The Thing, the original Thing with James Arness, and Ice Station Zebra had a really, really stupid
deformed baby.
Yeah. Really, really silly baby. A bad, ugly baby.
Yeah.
With overwrought narration. So I can guess the time period is somewhere in the late 50s, early 60s, but I have no idea.
1959. Okay. It's a movie called The Atomic Submarine.
Oh, well, there you go. Again, like the mushroom people.
Yeah.
Just try to hit it
submarine.
Right on the nose. Right on the nose. Yeah.
And they even got space in there. It's a submarine versus UFO under the Arctic ice.
Oh, see, space is what makes it awesome. Yeah.
Dogface Herman says, this movie suffers from 50 special effects, clumsy dialogue, bad sets, etc., etc. But I would like to see modern filmmakers take a crack at this story.
Wasn't that the plot of Alien vs. Predator?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They need to get James Caviezel in this one as the submarine commander.
That'd be great.
Because he's Jesus.
He's Jesus. I'm Jesus. Under the ice.
Under the ice. I'm the man in the suit. Yeah.
I can walk on water. Come on, dude. Anybody can walk on water on
their own. It's Arctic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's melting,
no trick.
But it's Arctic. Dogface Herman closes out, "I'm thankful that you put up with me."
Sure.
Yeah, whatever.
It's a struggle. I got to admit,
Every week, I think this is the episode where they say, enough, no more of this asshole. Not today, Dogface Herman.
Not today. We're thankful for Dogface Herman.
We are thankful for Dogface Herman. He makes this show possible in so many ways.
Which is why we put up with you for one more goddamn week.
All right. We had a letter a while ago from Craig.
Uh-huh.
Craig would like us to check out Black Mirror Season 2, Episode 3 on Netflix, so add that to our Netflix queue.
Again, this Netflix of which you speak, yeah. It sounds interesting.
Sci-fi, it's not sci-fi, but prescient politically in terms of Trump and the media. Also, he would like to hear if we have seen Sense8 by the Wachowski brothers, sister combo. Uh-huh. That is also a Netflix original, so it looks like we really do have to get to knowing how to do this Netflix thing. I mean,
Netflix.
We have Netflix and we could... It's so much easier to just watch it on a laptop, but if you and I want to watch something together, that's kind of hard.
I don't know. I like snuggling up in front of the roaring laptop with my wife, a cup of cocoa, and our big dog.
No, we don't have a dog.
We do watch things on Netflix. It's a fun struggle.
Yeah, it is. And actually, the same way that you watch on Netflix is how we watch our Amazon stuff. So we're watching Man in the High Castle, and
sort of.
I'm going to look up how to get it to stop doing what it's doing. It keeps pausing and going back to where we started. That's part of the plot.
It's an interactive story. It's part of the plot.
Yeah. Okay. It's a little annoying.
Yeah. It's very annoying.
Yeah.
And you have to thread it through a game console and other things. It reminds me,
someone's going to write in and tell us, no, you just need to fix it this way and you're done. You know.
Back at the condo, I was doing for my nephews,
mm-hmm.
and I think my sister was there too, doing a pool movie retrospective,
mm-hmm.
playing all the movies I have about pool playing and pool hustling, which is a considerable number, it turns out. And I think I turned Pool Hall Junkies into the longest goddamn movie in history, because apparently my DVD player,
mm-hmm.
remember when those existed? Would overheat after, so it would play for 10 minutes and then start again. And I turned this into like a 4-hour epic, which is essentially kind of it's an iffy movie. But again, I thought when everything was digital and being threaded through wires, these problems would go away, but apparently not.
No.
Or as I tell Hal Sparks every now and then when I listen to his show, one day science will crack this radio and television technology so that it works all the time, every time.
Yep. Yep. All right. Thank you, Dogface Herman. We sure are grateful for you.
We sure are.
And thank you, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. We love you so much. We love our listeners so much. We really do.
We do.
And I love you, Driftglass.
I love you too, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
And
happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Grateful for our marriage.
Mm-hmm. And we're recording this early, so if the world
ended... It's going to go up early,
Thursday,
too.
Yeah. Then we take no responsibility for events that happened on Thursday.
Anything that happens Thursday, any breaking news that happens over the holidays, we're not responsible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thanks.
On with the show.
On with the show. Bye.
I love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.